Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarlane, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is holding fort in East Nashville. Chase McCabe in Bellevue out on the west side of town. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link Game Studios, brought to you by or powered by RumbleOn.com. Guys, how you doing?
What's up, Darren?
What's new and exciting? We're watching a little Korean baseball?
Willie's fired up.
He is fired up.
I didn't watch any. I did see some highlights.
I saw the highlights, yeah.
I know the game that they were going to televise had a rain delay that started at midnight, so this is going to be a problem staying up that late. But it was great to see some baseball. And as we've been talking about, people are going to be watching very closely how this works, and we're all hopeful that it goes well. In fact, I saw an interview of Dan Straley, who was a longtime major leaguer. He's pitched for, I think, six different major league teams. He happened to sign a contract in South Korea. He got the opening day start for the team. We actually did this last night as a group. We all adopted teams, even though we have no idea what team means what. There's 10 teams in the league. And so we said, what the heck? Let's each adopt a team. It was actually an idea of a friend of mine, Andrew Marinus, who's been on the show. He's adopted a team himself. So we've all kind of picked one. And so we're going to follow these teams. And so Dan Straley got the win for the team that I adopted, the Giants. And he did an interview this morning with Mike Greenberg. It was really interesting, talking about pitching with no fans, how they piped music in. They had like some cheerleaders there to try to create some atmosphere in the game. They had the young man who threw out the first pitch actually do it in a bubble, so he was secured from everybody else in the stadium, the players and everything. So they pulled out all the stops to do the best that they could. So good first day for the Korean baseball organization.
Yeah, and we have indeed picked our teams. We're going to chart, hopefully have some type of wager. That would be fun. I don't know anything about these teams, but we did all select our teams. And I believe, Willie, our teams went head-to-head to start off the season, and I'm already 0-1.
I'm 0-1, too, with the Samsung Lions.
So you are
Samsung Lions.
Samsung Lions.
Yep.
They have some great TVs at that park for sure.
They do.
I've got the, what, Doosan Bears? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how you say these. Because mine is the Lotte Giants. I think I'm saying it right, but I'm not sure.
I just know that the Samsung Lions manager, Kim Hong-soo, he's on the hot seat already. 0-1.
Already?
Yeah, not a good way.
It's a little early for that.
No. We're not talking hot seats. Did you see Matt Williams' performance yesterday with the Kia Tigers? They lost 2-11 yesterday.
When you said that Matty Williams two was to their 11. Manager, I was
2-11? Who says that? 2-11?
11-2. There you go. 2-11, 11-2.
Man, I thought we had them. We lost 1-7.
I just wanted to put emphasis on the two. That's why I put it first. That's how bad it was.
Well, if you say they lost, then we know that they're going to have the
I wanted to put emphasis
number.
That they only scored two runs. And let me just tell you this. Matt Williams, Indians legend, of course. Indians great. But
yes.
they lost yesterday. It was bad. It was three innings where they allowed three or more runs. And it's terrible. Like he's going to get fired after this year.
When they
sure.
have you gotta, fans gotta there the for Kia together. Tigers games, do they give away cars? What do they do? What's the big giveaway?
I don't know. They should.
Like Chase can give away TVs. You could give away cars. I don't know what the Doosan Bears could give away or the Lotte Giants. But
I can tell you one other fun fact about the Giants, though. On the coaching staff is the one, the only Julio Franco, Julio, who I think still could probably come off the bench and pinch hit. He's probably
70 yet. He's got to be 70.
Well, he played until he was 63.
Yeah, so he's got to be 70 by now. Julio Franco, wow.
There is one guy on my team that I've heard of, and I've barely heard of him. Ben Lively was a pitcher. That's it. That's all I got.
I think every team, what do you know about almost Ben? Every team has a handful of American players.
Well, they have a picture of a couple of American players, but they don't have their name. Like, are they just nameless? They just have numbers.
Well, we got to find a good website is what we need. I've seen a few guys on Twitter that do a good job of recapping some of the highlights of the league, but I need some standings. We need to be able to follow this the right way here.
Apparently, the Doosan Bears are last year's champs. So,
team finished last year. My team had the highest payroll in the league, the Giants, and finished last. So, very much like the Mets. So that's why I adopted them.
Mm, yeah.
I want to know if they've always had English websites or if this is something that they've done this year because they know that Americans are going to be watching.
Well, remember we watched the Taiwan baseball games and they have, you know, broadcasters in English or broadcast right. in English. So I'd have to believe I would think special attention. They know special attention is being brought onto their baseball leagues right now around the world. And they're probably trying to cater to some new fans. And they know that Americans will probably it's our pastime, and they know that probably some Americans will check out the product. That's what I would guess. I doubt that they usually have broadcasts in English, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Well, ESPN is showing a game at midnight each night. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
Now, what I didn't get the chance to see because of the rain delay. Are there American announcers in a studio in the States, or are they picking up somebody?
Well, I'm pretty sure Eduardo Perez did a game, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So he did a game. So they're doing Americans.
I'm guessing he's not over there then. I'm guessing they're in the studio.
Oh, I bet you they're doing him from Bristol.
Yeah. That's what I would guess.
Which is interesting because that's a conversation we had last week about the NHL, and really you can put any sport in this. So is that what they're going to do? Would they have announcers at whatever facility they're playing the games at, or are they going to do them remotely? And, I mean, you have to assume that that's what ESPN's doing, that they have their baseball crew at a studio in Bristol doing it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be discussed. I would say that you can still separate all of the announcers from the team. Like, you can have the announcers be in the area and not ever get near a player. But we'll see how it goes, because I do think you do give up a lot game from a remote site. But all options, I would have to say, are on the table, and we'll probably continue to study it. There was a big Board of Governors meeting yesterday for the NHL where they really tabled everything. I thought that there was speculation from Pierre LeBrun that they might announce some things after the meeting, but they've waited. The speculation is they're going to do the draft in June, even though they probably at that time won't have even started play yet. But they're working through all of the hurdles that would entail in terms of the draft order and trades that are contingent on who finishes where in the season. For example, there's a trade that was made between, I think, Vancouver and New Jersey, or Tampa and New Jersey. I can't remember exactly, but there's a first-round draft pick that goes into effect if a team makes the playoffs or not. And Vancouver, as you know, is right on the bubble of making the playoffs. And so how do you work through that? Those are the type of things that they're trying to address.
Just have to make some tough decisions.
Yep.
You just got to make a decision, and everybody's got to live with it. And say, sorry, it stinks, but, you know, we're in unusual times. So a decision had to be made, and that's our decision. There's no right answer. It's impossible.
Yeah, you're not.
There is no right answer. You don't.
Impossible.
Right? So you just have to deal with it. That's just part of it. Marquise, I've got good news, bad news on your Kia Tigers. Which one do you want first?
I mean, give me the bad news first. Just get it out of the way.
The bad news is they were really bad last year. Really bad.
Yeah, they were.
They were 62-80 last year. That's the bad news. So they were a bad team last year. But You want to hear the good news?
What's the good news?
They have the most championships of any team in the Korean Baseball League.
Yeah. They won more recent than my Dodgers, so kudos to them.
Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt.
It won plenty before my Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there you go. There's your good news, bad news. They were bad last year, but overall, they've been a very successful franchise.
I'm going to try to figure out who am I going to dislike more, Dave Roberts or Matt Williams at the end of the season. So we'll find out. I'll give you an update. Once baseball is underway, I'll give you an update on which one I despise the most.
When do we think baseball? Because once we have NASCAR getting, you know, going, and then golf and MLS. By the way, MLS, are they not supposed to start getting back? Is the Nashville SC supposed to get back together this week? Did I not read that? Did anybody else see that? I think they're getting back together this week. Like, they're going to start, I think, training. I think I saw that or read that.
Yeah, wasn't it like May 8th that the MLS said that everybody could get back together?
Well, that would be this week, so
right. No,
that
that's
would make
I mean.
Sense.
But May 8th has been that date that has been thrown out there quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know what day it was, but I'm pretty sure that they're getting back together to start training this week. So I'll be curious to see how everybody else responds, because the NHL, as Willie brought up, the NBA and Major League Baseball have been pretty quiet here of late.
Yeah.
Fair to say?
Yeah, they have.
I mean, the NBA especially, right? They've gone really quiet for a while.
Well, they moved their draft lottery. They did postpone that, and that was supposed to be next week. So that's like the only news coming out of the NBA.
Yeah, I'm talking about more or less of like anything, you know. We had that whole Vegas story way back. It feels like forever ago, but there really hasn't been much since.
Well, you know, I don't know why, but I would have to think part of it is – there's got to be a little wait and see how this reopening goes, right? There's a lot of worry, I think, by some.
How could
that
you do that? How could
be
you wait
going
and see?
Too much too fast?
But how could you wait and see till then? Like, you have to make decisions well before then. You can't wait and see.
Well, I think they've made a lot of decisions. I think they've probably, behind the scenes, made some plans of what they want to do. But it's a matter of, you know, when you it's like we've been saying all along, when you go out and announce something, your intentions can change, right? Because this is such a moving target. It's so hard to know what things will look like 3 weeks down the road, right?
That's why you have to just keep having conversations.
So you wait as long as you can. You wait as long as you can.
Right.
Yep. I want to eat and drink whatever Frank Gore eats and drinks, because he just signed a 1-year deal with the Jets, according to Adam Schefter. He's just the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps going and going and going. And so Frank Gore is going to play another year of football at running back, and he's got to be pushing 40 by now. He's got to be. My goodness. You talking
Frank
about
Gore is 36.
36. When does he turn 37? He's got to be close to turning 37.
Yeah, May 14th.
Oh, he turns 37 a little bit over a week?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. 37 years old and still going. We're ready to put them all out at the pasture at 30. He's going to be 37 and still going. Wow. Good for Frank Gore. All right, we'll come back. Going to do something a little different on the other side. Brian Sweat is the headmaster of Lighthouse Christian School, and we got into an interesting conversation with Butch Spearden about the flood yesterday on the show, and David Poyle on Friday. I know a lot of people, you know, it got lost in the shuffle a little bit over the weekend. That was the 10-year anniversary, so to speak. It's not really anything you celebrate. It's just something you remember, an historical flood in your area. And Lighthouse Christian School, that trailer that was going down 24 is an iconic video. I mean, that'll be shown forever. And that was a part of Lighthouse Christian School. And we'll talk with Brian Sweat how they rebuilt their school and what that time was like. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Little Post Malone bringing us back from break here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Going to do something a little bit different here to start off today's show. We have tried to recognize the historic flood that hit Middle Tennessee. Hard to believe it's been a decade ago. And we talked with Butch Spearden yesterday on the show, who is the president and CEO of the Nashville Convention and Visitors Bureau. We talked with Predators General Manager David Poyle about it on Friday and what it did to the arena back then. Now we're going to talk to Brian Sweat, who's the headmaster over at Lighthouse Christian School. And for a guy that lives down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna, and a guy that was supposed to take his wife to Jimmy Buffett that Saturday night, I believe on May 1st at Bridgestone Arena, when we saw the video on I-24, and it looked like part of a school floating down the interstate, I looked at my wife and said, I don't think we're going to the concert tonight, because 24 is how we're getting to Bridgestone Arena. And Brian is on the line with us. Brian, how you doing?
Doing great. How you guys doing this morning?
That is an iconic video 10 years later, and it's a video, an iconic video that will always be shown whenever we always reference the flood here in Middle Tennessee 10 years ago. What was it like for you guys and your school, obviously, knowing, first of all, when did you see that video on the news?
So I saw it live as Leland Statham was actually calling it, you know, from the interstate camera. And at first, you know, it looked like, it was a portal building for us, and it looked like somebody's home. And I thought, man, I feel really bad for that person whose building is floating down the interstate. Then it flipped around, and we had a big hope sign on it. I go, oh, wow, we are those people. That's our hope building where we do some of our community service and international work.
Oh, my goodness. And what was that feeling like knowing, oh, my gosh, that is a part of our school floating down 24?
Well, it just brought home the reality of that was up on a hill, and if that building was affected, we knew when we got back to camps, we were able to get there, we were going to see so many buildings, other buildings affected and impacted, and we just didn't know what exactly we would find.
Yeah, I've told the story many times, Brian, over the years, that Saturday it rained all day, and obviously we knew we were getting an abnormal amount of rain. And as I said, we were supposed to go to a concert that night. I realized that most of the roads, they were shutting down at that point. But we didn't really realize it until Sunday, right? Whenever the pictures started coming out from the, you know, helicopters for the local news channels, and that's when we really understood, like, how bad this was and how bad our area had been affected. When were you first able to get to your school and assess the damage?
So we were able to get there Sunday morning. We had if you remember, there was a little bit of break from the rain on Sunday morning.
Yes.
As quick as our fields flooded, they received. And so we were able to get there. And then, of course, that second wave of flooding came Sunday. And when we saw what we saw, I remember getting a phone call from Janice Fagan, my preschool director. And she lives close by, and she was able to get to preschool. She opened the door, and she said, Mr. Sweat, you know, it's devastating. I said, well, you know, I'm always ever hopeful. Well, Janice, we'll get in there. We'll work hard. We'll clean up. She goes, Mr. Sweat, you don't understand. There's no opening anytime soon. And so it was just one of those real stark moments that even when you're hopeful and think that everything's going to be okay, the reality sometimes set into the tragedy that took place.
Yeah, so you're the perfect person to ask this. Brian Sweat on the line with us, headmaster at Lighthouse Christian School. We're talking about the historic flood that hit our area 10 years ago, just had the 10-year anniversary of that over the weekend. And, you know, we're sitting here in unusual times. We're doing a radio show from our homes. There's a three-man show that, you know, we're all doing it from our homes. We've been doing it for almost 2 months like this. School has been out. But you went through that. I mean, everybody has to adjust, right, and try to figure out the next step. I thought Butch Spearden did put it well, though, yesterday. The difference is when the rain stopped, we didn't have to worry. You know, we knew, okay, then we just had to fix everything. Where with this, you don't really have the answers for down the road, so it's not exactly an apples-to-apples question. But back then, how did you go about trying to figure out, okay, now what do we do?
Yeah, and that, you know, that's a great question. And the comparisons between the two, I think there was one difference before I answer that question, is the flood was very physically demanding. And there was some obviously strong emotions involved with the flood. But this COVID-19 has affected so many people, and it's been so emotionally demanding and draining. That's been really the hard part, I think, for me and many others, is getting those, getting your spirit up to go and lead your people, and being able to keep that up when you can't go see people and be recharged around people and help and serve them. You have to be away from people. But, you know, we stayed up that night, my wife and I, that Saturday night, and just started putting a list together of things that we thought might need to be done based on what we were hearing and reports we were receiving about the damage at our campus, because we knew Nashville. And we knew that when Nashville, when the storms cleared on Monday, we would have a ton of volunteers, and that absolutely happened. We started working on our stuff, and then quickly realized many of our neighbors were literally in their yard and just stunned at what was taking place, didn't have any idea. So we put our stuff on hold and went and started helping our neighbors and formed teams to go out and say, you know what, Lighthouse will still be here and all that stuff will still be here, but our neighbors got to get back in their homes. And the unique backstory of that is Lighthouse had gone for 40 straight months to Hurricane Katrina relief. So God gave us an opportunity to really get trained on how to muck out houses and how to help recover from the flood. Never thought we'd be in Nashville, and just never thought that would ever happen to us. But we had so many people that had that training. And, you know, Nashville and Tennessee certainly lived up to its name of being the volunteer state and watching our community come out and support all those who had lost so much. And even in this COVID pandemic, seeing people like you guys keeping your show going. I know that's tough. There's challenges. But those are important things that bring some hope and inspiration to people. And we hope our story of recovery, the miraculous recovery we had because of our community who loved us, gave so much, who came and rebuilt our preschool through Extreme Makeover, will offer that hope and inspiration to our community and even to our nation. That's what we need right now. We just need someone to say, hey, we're going to get through this and we're going to be okay.
Well said, Brian. Brian Sweat is with us from Lighthouse Christian Academy. Brian, let's back up for just a moment, and for people that may not be familiar with your school, tell people about it because it's quite unique.
Yeah, we are really, really unique. I've been here and had the privilege of being the head of school here for 17 years. I never thought I'd be anywhere 17 years, but when you come to Lighthouse, you fall in love with the ministry here. At times, we're the most diverse, one of the most diverse high schools in the nation. So we're really diverse. Our tuition is less than $7,000. We're able to include kids that sometimes wouldn't have that opportunity. Of course, that's not everybody here, but there's a lot of folks who get that opportunity at that elite private education because the cost is kept affordable. And it's just a family. It really is. And from our founder, who's still with us, Dr. Ralph Henson, who started the ministry 40 years ago, he taught us how to serve. And that's kind of our mantra, is to go out and serve and to make a difference. And then we're trying to develop leaders here at Lighthouse so our young people, when they graduate, go out and change the world. And don't get me started on our graduates, because they are out making a huge difference, and we could talk about that for the next 4 hours, but I'm going to save you from that.
Well, Brian, let's tell the story. I want you to tell the story about one graduate, because we talked to Joel Ward last week after wrapping up a fantastic career, and as you know, he made his mark very well in Nashville when he was with the Predators, but he continued on with his relationship, and you guys have a very good connection with the Nashville Predators. And one of the young men that Joel mentored, Malik, I know graduated from your program, and he's a guy that I know every time we walk the hallways on game day, we see him hard at work, working for Pete Rogers and the staff there. He is he's just grown into a tremendous young man, and I know you guys had a lot of influence on him, just like Joel.
Yeah, Joel just, again, has that heart that so typifies people that live and serve in Nashville, just wanting to make a difference in other people's lives. And, of course, as you stated, we have a great relationship with the Nashville Predators. Since they've come, they've made our community so much better. Right before we got connected here for this call this morning, Kristen Finch, who works for the Pred, just said, hey, you know, you're going to do great this morning. Just gave that encouragement. And you know, the Malik story is very, very interesting. Malik was a young man who really didn't have any hope, a young man who had been expelled from 3 public schools. When the Preds came to us, when Joel signed elsewhere, Joel still stayed actively involved with the Preds, really rallied around Malik and it stepped in. Rebecca King and so many others were real critical in that. And they came to us and they said, hey, will you take Malik? And we're not a reform school at Lighthouse. That's not who we are. And so in that situation, we weren't sure we'd be able to take Malik and help him. But it was just real clear one evening, I was having my devotion and praying, God said, you're going to take Malik. And not audibly to me, just in my heart, I just knew it was the right thing to do, that we were supposed to do. And so we did. And it was an amazing transformation because you gave a young person that opportunity and that hope. And, when Malik first came in, he was really, stone-faced and had to act like he wanted to defeat the world. And within about 2 or 3 weeks, he turned back into a kid again and just was able to grow. He repeated his junior year at Lighthouse. He graduated. He was the first one in his family to ever graduate high school, the first one in his family ever to be able to attend college, and is just doing very, very well. Of course, we love Malik. All our graduates, we try to stay in touch with and connected with. And so I still catch up with him and see him, have him over for dinner and all those different things. And Malik's doing really, really well now. And it's just that opportunity. It takes a village of people who came around Malik, starting with Joel Ward, and help walk him through it and just break some habits and chains of a family that never had the opportunities that a lot of our families have. And so now we have a high school graduate. Now we have one that's attended college, and we know that Malik's going to have a very hopeful future.
Brian Sweat is with us from Lighthouse Christian School. And one thing that we've been discussing and thinking about a lot during all of this, Brian, because like we say, we've had a lot of downtime, is what can we learn from this situation? What does the future look like? What are some things that we can do differently? So I know those are conversations that probably take place within a school in normal times, all the time. So what are some things that you kind of look at the future and are looking for with Lighthouse?
You know, I think the thing that jumps out to me is we're so much better together. We let so many little things divide us in our community. And when we work together towards a common cause, which should be to help our young people grow and develop and encourage them and be their biggest cheerleaders, be the wind in their sails to help them go out and accomplish their dreams, accomplish the purpose that God's designed them for. When we work together towards those goals as a community and put aside some of these differences that we have that ultimately at the end of the day really don't matter. That's when you really start seeing that power. And that's what we love about Nashville is Nashville does that better than most. In my experience, and I've only been in a few different cities, and of course limited to what I've experienced, but just Nashville seems to be so much better at that than so many other places. We're not perfect. None of us are perfect. We're all going to have to grow and develop. But the more we can work together, the more that we can pool our resources and invest, and, really our future, which is our children, the better off our community is going to be.
All right, you've got to end on a high note for sure, and this has been great. You got to tell us the Extreme Makeover story. I mean, I watched the episode. I remember it well. What was that whole experience like? Give us the story and the background behind that.
That's a great question, too. Miracles, God had uniquely planned some things for Lighthouse. You know, the reality is we wouldn't be here without our community and Extreme Makeover showing up. But I want to share with you right before I share that, can I share with you one more quick story?
Sure. So
when we flooded, our entire preschool was flooded, and three of the buildings got destroyed during the Extreme Makeover. They actually dropped a truck on one, bulldozed one, and Ty pushed one over his finger. So there was no going back to that campus. But 7 years prior, someone had left a gift at Antioch First Baptist, which is literally about 50 yards across the street up on a hill. And they have about 100 people in their congregation. But they finished the Thursday before the flood a child's area for 150 kids. Now, again, only 100 kids, only 100 people in their entire congregation. And they were praying for someone to fill it up. Well, at that time, when the flood hit, we had 148 kids. So on Wednesday after the flood, we walked those 148 kids across the street into the state-of-the-art, beautiful child's area that Antioch First Baptist had made because of a gift 7 years earlier and kept school going. Without that, we probably wouldn't have made it to Extreme Makeover to even have that happen. So, again, that's another miracle, and that's what we're going to see even in these situations. We're going to see things that happen because people are going to do what's the right thing and do what they're supposed to do, and it's going to bless somebody else. Sometimes you don't even know why you're doing it. You just know it's the right thing. But soon after the flood, soon after those rainy days, I think it was on Monday, I got an email. And it said, this is Ashton Ramsey from Extreme Makeover. Will you call us? And he gave me a number. And I called my wife in, and I showed her. I said, can you believe this? I mean, here's somebody who's saying they're Extreme Makeover. And we'd already gotten some emails. Hey, we want to give you $5 million and you know, all this type of stuff. And I don't understand why people think it's fun to prey on people in tragedies like this. But you Google their name, and they say, run from them. Don't. It's a scam. Don't do
right.
it. And so I'm showing that to my wife. And she it just said, just a little frustrated at that point for trying to recover. And she walked out. About an hour later, she came back. I said, I just feel like you need to call the number. I'm praying. I feel like you need to call the number. I called the number, got a voicemail, hung up. Within 30 seconds, Ashton Ramsey, who was our casting director, called back and said, this is Extreme Makeover. And it was the real deal. And, of course, it's this huge process. And people say, how did you not know? But they lie to you, and they're really good at it. Lying to you, and of course, you're not a reality TV star, so you've never walked through any of this stuff, and they tell you things. In fact, the day of the door knock, they introduced us to people who they said were grief counselors because they said this is going on in several places in the community, and only one will get Ty. And the rest of you, of course, will be devastated. They said quite that way, but that's how we felt. That he's not coming. Of course, that's not what's happening, but you don't know that.
Right.
And the grief counselors, just other producers. So they do a really good job really protecting you from knowing what's going on so you get those real emotions. We were mic'd up, those types of things. So you're hopeful. You think it might happen. But until Ty walked through that door, you don't know what's going to happen. And when he did, I have no idea what he said because we were in a pep rally for the school, but the energy in that gym was one of the most electric moments of my life because, again, we knew we had hope, and it's that hope that is going to help us through these situations. We have to help our people keep hope. The Bible says hope deferred makes the heart sick, and so if we don't have hope, that's when we get sad, we get discouraged and depressed. So there's a lot of facets to that, but as long as we can give hope, your show is giving hope. Hopefully the story of Lighthouse and the recovery that our great community did for us with LP Building Solutions and DS&F and Hardaway Construction, Lee Company, and so many others will provide hope to others who are struggling right now.
Wow, that's great. I drive by there all the time. I always look, 10 years later, I still look over and because, like you said, you're up on the hill and you can see it. So really cool. Brian, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for going down memory lane with us 10 years ago and keep up the good work at Lighthouse Christian School.
Thank you guys so much. And anytime you guys are by, you've got to stop by and let me take you a tour of the preschool because the preschool is amazing. But what's really amazing is the hearts and lives of those little ones that are running through about 150 that we can have when we're at capacity. And anytime I'm having a bad day, that's where I go. I go down and just go see that sweet innocence that they have and enthusiasm for life and always puts a smile on my face and gives me a great perspective. So
be careful.
You're invited.
Be careful. I may take you up on that.
Love it.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it.
All right.
Brian Sweat, he's the headmaster at Lighthouse Christian School. Wow, that was really cool. 10 years ago, that historic flood, and he just laid it out perfectly. And when you go by there today, and like I said, I go by there all the time, and you can see how they built that school back up, and here it sits 10 years later, still thriving. So we appreciate Brian for joining us. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We will talk to Titans second-round pick Christian Fulton to kick off the second hour of the program. Also, Buzz Peterson in the second hour. So good conversation there with Brian Sweat, who's the headmaster of Lighthouse Christian School. We appreciate him joining us. And you just heard it, the second hour loaded with some really, really good guests. There's a lot of you working from home, and don't forget that you can stream us from anywhere. You can download the Game Nashville app. That's one way to do it. You can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home, or you can and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can also live stream it from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Guys, I feel like the more I keep looking at stuff, looks like there was a fight that was supposed to take place in the UFC on May 9th has now been moved to early June. It just seems like things are moving toward the month of June. I was reading something yesterday where, I don't know if you guys saw this, where Arkansas's AD, Hunter Yurecek, who was doing a press conference or Zoom call, whatever, and that he had told, or he had, actually he had told some University of Arkansas Board of Trustees that he is planning on football practice starting in July with the season on pace to open up on September 5th. That's what they were reporting in Arkansas. And so it was pretty interesting how the campus in Fayetteville has been shut down completely for the entire spring semester when all this hit. But as according to Arkansas's AD, he was telling the Board of Trustees at Arkansas yesterday that it looks like they will indeed be practicing in July, and they are set to open up at the beginning of September. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I hope he's right. I would say that Arkansas, from what I've seen, has been one of the more aggressive states in reopening, staying open, all of that stuff. So that doesn't surprise me too much. Hunter Yurcich, by the way, was at one time at Vanderbilt way back when on the athletic staff. Yeah, he actually this would have been in the 90s when he was very young.
Okay, he wasn't here. Okay.
Yeah, you might have been just getting here while he was still here. I want to say mid to late 90s before he started moving up the ranks in other places. So I hope he's right. I don't know that anybody can say definitively that that's going to happen. But I think right now everybody is hoping cautiously that some of this reopening goes well. I know there's a lot of health experts that are expressing concerns, you know, concerned optimism. It's going to be a lot up to the decisions people make as we reopen, right? Because nobody wants to plan everything and move forward and then have to go back a step, go from phase two back to phase one or phase three back to phase two, you know? So I don't know what I make of it, but I guess I'm not too surprised because when I see somebody representing Arkansas, that seems to be the attitude that they have over there. They've been pretty aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like football, especially both the NFL and college football, and maybe it's different for some college programs for sure, but there's this focus of we're going to plan for September until we're told not to. And there's probably somewhere a plan B or plan C, but you know, the NFL is releasing their schedule. I saw ESPN did a study that a majority of sports fans, they would rather sports start back without fans than have to wait. So I wonder how much of that's being taken into account. But the thing with college football, and we discussed this last week, is I think it's got to be an all or nothing. You can't have, you know, a couple of schools over here say, yeah, we're ready, we want to start back, and then have a couple schools over here saying, well, we can't, we're not there yet. It's just, it's different.
But that's very possible, though, I think. Don't you think?
It may
I cannot imagine that all that 11 states all are in exactly the same spot. But maybe. We'll see.
Did California's governor yesterday not say that they're about ready to reopen their state? I mean, California, right? I mean,
that's been an interesting story. I mean, California is so big, right? You've got it's a huge state. They're doing it in small phases. There's been, you can imagine, different factions of California. Some areas, just kind of like our state, some areas are saying we're ready. You know, we haven't had very many cases. We can do this. Other parts of the state, like Nashville has in Tennessee, there are some areas like San Francisco, I think, in California that say we're not ready yet. You know, so we got to remain closed. So there's some of that going on as well. And so that's a possibility, right? You have different areas within a state that could be in different spots. That could affect different college athletic programs.
Yes, clearly. There's some pretty big schools in Southern California. There's some big schools in Northern California, too, or at least schools in the Pac-12 in Northern California. Arkansas is set to open up their season at home against Nevada, and it is interesting that Yurcich also said that they have looked into disinfecting the stadium and also ensuring social distance with the fans. So he's not talking about playing games in front of no one. They are certainly talking about, you know, figuring out a way to properly get fans in the stadium in a safe manner. So it does not
the proper
seem like,
percentage,
right?
It would, you know, like I think I saw it might have been the Korean league that they, you know, right now they have no fans, but they are hoping, and this is what they should be commended for. Of course, it sort of hit them earlier than us, and they're a lot smaller than us as a nation, right? So it might have been much of an easier task for them than it is for us, that we have so much more vast territory and so many more people. But they got on the testing early, and they got to a point where they felt comfortable. But they're hopefully they continue to pull this off, and they continue to be sort of a model that others can follow. Their hope is that they can go from no fans to, I think they said, 20% capacity in the stadium. They could space out the fans.
Did you guys see that the Dolphins actually unveiled on what was it? Good Morning America. Yesterday they unveiled.
Yeah, I saw something like that.
Tom, their CEO Tom Garfinkel, unveiled a plan that would basically they have social distancing measures in place and then limiting attendance to 15,000.
15,000. Okay.
For a football game.
Yeah,
15,000
at Hard Rock Stadium. They're in the process of planning.
That's a pretty good distance. Between each fan.
This is from the Sun Sentinel. The Miami Dolphins are in the process of planning how to best implement social distancing at games if teams are allowed to host fans during the 2020 NFL season. This was unveiled yesterday in an exclusive interview on Good Morning America. The mock-up includes colored spots on the ground leading to the entrance gates, which are designed to keep distance between fans as they enter the stadium. There was also talk of limiting attendance to 15,000 fans, where Hard Rock can hold up to 65,000 plus.
Oh, was that all Hard? I thought Hard Rock held more than that. 65,000.
Okay. Yeah, just
so
that's
about what, about a third? 000. Close to a third? A little less than a third? Is that 25%? Maybe it is.
They're still in the planning stages. They did say that they will follow the NFL and U.S. government guidelines when sporting events are deemed safe again. But, hey, I'll give them credit.
That'll be something to see if we can go in phase. This is the phased plan that you hope can take effect, right? You can go from zero to a certain percentage where people are sitting there, but they're spread apart, and then eventually work back up into the full throttle.
Yeah, I'm really curious because in some places it's not that big of a deal, right? Because let's be honest, there's not a demand for tickets. But, you know, how does Alabama feel about it? How does Clemson and Ohio State, or, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks, who become the new sexy story in the NFL, and they've got Tom Brady and Gronkowski, and they were going to be set to probably sell out every game easily this year now in the NFL. You know, how do they handle that? How do they feel about it? I guess some is better than none, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's probably it. The thing I'm wondering about is how do they determine if you have this rabid fan base, at the same time you probably have some of that fan base that might be a little cautious about whether they want to go to a game yet. You know, if you're a little older, if you're vulnerable, that sort of thing. But also you have to determine who is going to sit in those seats, right? Who wants to? What's your demand, right? Do you have 40,000 people that want the 20,000 seats?
Right. How
do
you determine? That's a great
point.
Is
it a lottery?
How do you determine? Yeah. That's a glad I don't have to
be
make
an interesting
that
challenge.
Yeah. What if you have, in Alabama's case, well, they hold 100,000, so they've got 100,000 people. Let's say all 100,000 want to go. You can only seat, you put 30,000 in there. What do you do? Like who gets the 30,000?
Yeah, it's a tough call.
Yikes! Biggest donor.
And are there some places where you'd like to have 15,000, and you don't have 15,000 that are ready to do it for whatever reason? Just because it's a smaller pool of fans that you're starting with, or maybe that area has been more affected at that particular time. There's a lot of ways it can go.
Well, yeah, that's why I said some places it will, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. But what about the hot, you know, the places where a ticket is a hot commodity and everybody wants to go? How do they handle it? So
yeah, Tampa might be one of them, right? That's a great example. There's going to be some exuberance to want to see these guys.
I would have to believe Tampa was going to sell out this year, would be my guess.
Yeah, one would think. But I'm glad that we're not the ones that have to make all these decisions. I mean, I can't, because it's going to change 18 times in just in a month. You know, you think you have something figured out, and then you got to change all over again.
We'll see where this all goes. It's going to be interesting for sure. But I was kind of hoping, as you brought up earlier, that the NHL was going to have a little bit more to put out there. But, man, just seemed like not ready to really release anything yet. I'll be curious to see who's the first of the three that we were talking about. Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL. Who's the first to kind of come out with a real plan? Like, here
because
you go.
We've just laid it out on the table. Yeah, it's been pretty widely speculated that the NBA would like to open up some practice facilities, and I think the NHL has floated this out there as well by around May 15th. But as we get closer to that date, and it's still possible, but remember, there's a lot of logistics. In fact, I just read an article today out of Canada where the prime minister, is that what you call Trudeau? Is he the prime minister of Canada? I think that's his title, the head of Canada, you know, their equivalent of the president.
Yes.
He said that, you know, if you're coming back in and you're a hockey player and you live in Sweden or one of the other countries, you have to quarantine when you're here. I mean, it's just basic protocol, right? Whether you're a hockey player or a plumber or whatever, you know, you got to come in here and quarantine for a couple weeks. So, in fact, I saw the Korean Baseball League. There's a couple of American pitchers that would be, you know, opening day starter, number two starter, that are still not through the whole protocol. And so they're not ready to pitch yet. They're still coming off of the quarantine and catching back up to everybody else because they couldn't start practicing with everybody else. So that'll be a sign to see if some of the guys start coming back over.
Yeah.
All right, we will come back and we'll talk to Titans second-round pick Christian Fulton from LSU. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.